Hello, beautiful. Welcome back to another episode of the Men to Bloom podcast. I'm so excited to share this episode with you. Okay, so a little bit of backstory here is that I am so tired of hearing that moms can't have any fun beyond going to the bathroom alone. Okay, I've been talking about this a lot lately, is that we spend nearly 24 hours of our lives in the same room as the world's greatest fun havers, right? We spend all of our time with our kids, and what are kids great at? Learning through play. They thrive on play. It's all they do is want to play and to have fun. We can learn from them. We can be inspired by them. Okay? They can create play out of any situation if we allow them to, right? If we're not shutting them down, they want to have fun. And we should learn to do that. All right? It's time to tap into that childlike wonder and let yourself enjoy the mundane moments of life. Because life is what you make it. Let's make it fun. Today, I am joined by Dr. Mike Rucker. Okay, this is the first male voice I have allowed on this podcast, and it is for great reason. This man knows his stuff, and he is a father and a husband, and he knows how to speak to the mom out there who needs to have more fun in your life, right? All right, so Mike Rucker, he is an organizational psychologist. So many big words in his bio, by the way. This man's a professional. He is an expert. But Dr. Mike Rucker is an organizational psychologist, behavioral scientist, and charter member of the International Positive Psychology Association. This man knows his stuff. He has been academically published in publications like the International Journal of Workplace Health Management. His ideas about fun and health have been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Fast Company, Psychology Today, Forbes, Vox, Thrive Global, Mindful, Mind Body Green. You get it, right? He currently serves as a senior leader at Active Wellness and is the author of the best-selling book, The Fun Habit, which is out now. I have listened to The Fun Habit on Audible, and I gotta tell you, it is full of golden nuggets of wisdom and insightfulness. That book is the reason why I went ahead and said yes to Mike coming on the podcast and talking to you guys, because his voice, it's a voice of authority, but it's a voice of kindness. And it's a voice that says, like, let's have more fun in life, right? You're definitely going to get good vibes from this one. In this episode, we are chatting about three of the secret steps to unlocking fun in life. We are talking about the science behind fun. And we're talking about his book, The Fun Habit. But first, before we jump in to all of this goodness of having more fun, I do have to tell you something super duper exciting. My signature course, Unblock Your Joy, goes along with the topic too, right? It's finally back on the market and it's fully uploaded and ready for enrollments. Okay. You remember when I was going through that whole platform shift and I marked everything down on my Etsy and I marked down in the Teachable, and I was leaving all of my platforms and kind of shifting everything on the behind the scenes of business. I also changed my website. If you have logged in and noticed that, there was a lot going on behind the scenes of business over here, which I don't usually like to talk about a whole lot because this isn't a business podcast. This is a, you know, let's make mom life more fun kind of podcast. Anyways, yeah, business side's not very fun. But I finally have Unblock Your Joy, the first signature course, back up and open for enrollments. And I am so excited to announce that. Let me tell you a little bit about it. It's on sale. If you are listening in real time this week, it is marked down on sale and it will incrementally be increasing the price back up to its original $99 pricing, which is where it will stay. I'm not going to raise it back up to $188 like it used to be full price, as my business mentor tells me it's worth, and it's worth far more than that. She says, you know, $188 is a reasonable price for this course in this market, in this economy, but I don't like charging full price for it ever. So I perpetually have it marked down to $99, just forever sale, I guess is the way I look at that. That's back to the original like launch price of $99, but I have it on sale this week, starting at $49 and raising it up a little bit by a little bit until we're back to February 10th, where it's going to be back to its full forever sale price of $99. Just FYI. Now, if you want to know a little bit more about Unblock Your Joy, this course is so close to my heart. This course is why I'm alive. It's like the happy mom brain on crack. Like, let me hold your hand and walk you through all of these tools and all of these tips. Let's shift your mindset and change the way you show up in life. Because so often I have this theory that we block joy from our own lives, whether it's because we feel like we're undeserving or because we simply feel uncomfortable with the unknown. Like, sometimes our comfort zone is inside of this shell that's just constantly saying no to help, no to excitement, no to fun, no to good things. And we gotta stop that. And this course is to walk you through that, right? I believe that we're meant for joy and we're meant for peace. And too often we let ourselves get caught up in the mundane day-to-day tasks of life. And we lose sight of what's truly important to us because we are blinded by the stress and the urgency. And we just get stuck in these ugly cycles that don't leave any room for excitement or rest, peace, joy. Here's the thing though, is that you're in control of your own life. You get to decide where your time and energy goes. You get to choose to let peace and joy into your life. And you are the gatekeeper of your own energy. You're the queen and it's up to you. I endlessly searched Pinterest when I first became a mom. I was reading all kinds of how-to articles in those first early years. And I thought that I was doing a terrible job. I really, really did. I had no positive voices on my side telling me, hey, you're the best mom for your kids. Hey, you're doing everything right. You're doing your best and your best is enough. Keep showing up, keep going. I didn't have that voice at those earliest years. And it was rough. Turns out that I was doing a terrible job of taking care of my own mindset. I was letting negative thoughts and limiting beliefs lead me down this dark mental path. And I was blind to happiness. I was blind to blessings. I was incapable of true gratitude at that time. I was a depressed mess. And when I wasn't depressed, I was still holding on to those habits of depression, those soul-sucking, soul-crushing habits. And it took me far too long to realize that the root problem was my mindset and my habits. My habits weren't going to get fixed until my mindset was. I had to feel worthy of holding healthy habits before I could hold them, right? That's why I want to grab you by the hand and walk you down this path of lightness with me. That's why this is so important to me. That's why I'm so passionate about what I do. That's why I took hours upon hours to curate this course for you, along with two others, but they'll be coming later this year. It wasn't my life that sucked at that time. It was the way I viewed my life that sucked. I realized I knew how to let myself be happy and I just wasn't doing it. All of those how-tos, those challenges, the checklists, they weren't working for me because I needed to go back to square one and I needed to start from a healthy mindset, feelings of worthiness, before I could move down that right path, right? The path of growth. So what that means is that the cure is learning to look at everything differently, which means that creating solutions differently than ever before is what we need to do. And that's what this course does. So are you ready to make shift happen? Your mindset is either your greatest enemy or your greatest asset, and you get to decide that. It's time to choose happy. It's time to choose fulfillment. It's time to stop playing the victim in your own home and start owning your mom life. You are the curator of your happiness. It's that simple. It's your time to take action and live the peaceful, joyful mom life that you've been afraid to dream of. Unblock your joy is your first step on the road to happy motherhood. This is how I got from there to here. It's all covered in detail, step by step in this course, Unblock Your Joy. And again, as I told you, the price is discounted this week only, and it's gradually increasing until it's back to its full price of $99, which is honestly a steal in this industry for a course of this size, magnitude, impact, right? Something that promises this much transformational, you know, promise. Usually you're going to be paying a lot more than 99 bucks for that these days. So on February 10th, it will be back up to its full price. If this course is for you, if you are feeling everything I just said, if this is creating some kind of an emotional response in you that says, yes, I think I need this, get in sooner rather than later. Like, save your money, get in while the getting is good. Right, my friend? I love you so much. Thanks for being here. And without any further ado, here is your episode.
Hello, my beautiful friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Mental Bloom podcast. I'm here today with Mike Rucker. He is a PhD in behavioral science and the author of The Fun Habit, which I am so enjoying listening to on audiobooks right now, because that's the only way I can really get into a book at this point, deep into motherhood. But today I want him to come and share with you how we can shift our pursuit of happiness and make these adjustments with all of these evidence-based practices that he's really keen on, and how we can invite more joy and fun into our super busy lives. All right. So hi, Mike, you want to?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, we can jump right into it. I think, you know, more so than ever, we are living such busy lives, right? And so I think, you know, a way to get started is really just becoming mindful that you have some power over how you spend that time, because so many of us have forgotten that, right? And so wherever you find yourself, especially if you feel depleted and you just don't have the energy to get, like, how am I going to take that first step? I think figuring out there's 168 hours in the week. Like, let's try and find two or three of those where we can start to play with some of the variables to, you know, inject a little bit more joy into the week that you have. And generally, there's three things, you know, three components of how we spend our time that we can manipulate. One are the things that we're doing, two, the people that we're with, but oftentimes as parents, maybe that becomes a little bit tougher. And then, you know, how we're actually going about that. And so, you know, whatever it is that you find enjoyable, like, how can you figure out how to integrate a few of those things back into your week if you find that they're missing?
Yes, absolutely. Goodness, yes. And we were chatting so much about, right before we started recording, this whole, we feel like we have to do things, but there's also this whole, like, we get to do stuff. And shifting that mindset from have to get to without this toxic positivity that you mentioned, because that can get to be like, oh, you have to enjoy every single moment. But it's like, no, newborn stage, I enjoy the snuggles. I enjoy the smell of their head, but I did not enjoy being covered in, like, poop and vomit all of the time. Like, you don't have to enjoy every single bit, but there's ways that you can infuse fun into the things you're already doing. And I was actually just listening in on your audiobook this morning to refresh my mind. And you were talking about, like, tethering fun to what you're already doing.
Yeah, so that concept's called activity bundling. And if there's a way to change the circumstance, right? So, like, an example often with parents that I saw was through that lens of duty, right? Like, I just have to get my kids outside, they're on their screens, like, whatever it takes, right? And so initially, without any forethought, they'll take their child to the playground and then they'll just sit because they feel like it's a job to be done on the bench, not understanding that that activity could have been anything if they had kind of co-created that experience with the kid or even led by example, right? And so, you know, for us, it might be Nerf gun wars or, you know, just anything that gets them moving. And so we're still accomplishing what we set out to do, but it's something that we enjoy. And so that's going to be as unique as the person listening. You know, maybe Nerf gun war sounds awful to the listener, but there's probably something that they like, is it cooking? Is it, you know, crafting, you know, so doing something, and it doesn't necessarily require money anymore either, right? With things like YouTube, you know, there's lessons about any, you know, activity that you can imagine. And so, you know, if you feel like you're doing some of this stuff, you know, that's oriented into just trying to get your child from point A to point B, is there a way to integrate things that you actually enjoy doing? And there is multiple benefits to that, right? One, you're not just wasting time, because we know the folks that are sitting on that, you know, metaphorical park bench, you don't encode those memories unless you're really, really enjoying watching your child play. You know, most times you can see you're just trying to pass the time. Oftentimes you'll see parents on social media, and we know that your brain kind of shuts off. It's like, okay, this isn't important. I'm just trying to get this chore done, right? But when you manifest it into something that's actually enjoyable, then you're now creating memories, right? Like, oh, I remember when we created those crazy cookies together. And remember that accident? That was silly, but it was still so much fun. And so once you start to index those things, a few things have happened. One, again, you now have these fun memories that you can relish, right? And we know that adds to resilience because it kind of gives you purpose. Like, oh yeah, I am kind of enjoying this journey of parenthood. But then also, it allows you to understand that you do have more agency and autonomy over how you spend your time. And so slowly but surely, you start to make better choices too. Like, wait, this isn't just, as you alluded to, this isn't going to happen to me. I actually have some control. And over time, it creates what we call in psychology emotional flexibility, because obviously not all days are going to be great, right? There are going to be times where, you are up against the wall because your child is being disobedient, or the day just didn't break your way. And it's going to be hard to make those days fun. And I would actually posit that maybe you just don't even try, because when you get so outcome focused on trying to have, good days only, that can become really problematic. As you know, I unpack that in the book. And we also know that can lead to, over time, things as dire as clinical outcomes like depression. But if you understand that on a good proportion of the things that you do, you can at least bias the outcome towards things that bring you joy, then that really is, you're living in the sphere of empowerment rather than, okay, I'll just get through this day.
Yes, absolutely. And one thing that came to my mind with all that is so often we get caught in this thinking of like something has to happen in a certain way because that's the way it's always happened. And that way is usually not fun or highly productive or, there's something wrong with the way we're doing it. And we never stop to think, I could do this differently. Like honestly, with the park, I used to take my kids to the park and just like sit and watch them play. And I thought it was boring. And it felt like a waste of time because they could just play at home. Like, it's no different to me. We're safer at home because I get like this high anxiety from watching way too many like Criminal Minds and Law and Order SVU. And I'm like, my kids are going to get taken at the park. I'm convinced my kids are going to get taken at the park. So, how can I keep a better eye on them? And then I started really enjoying taking them to the park because I started just playing with them. I'm like, well, if I'm chasing my kids, I know exactly where they are. And then also, it's fun for me, the endorphins and the adrenaline, and you get all these like, it's a workout, like the chemical spike you get from a workout, but it doesn't feel as boring as working out because I don't enjoy working out. So I'm like, now I'm doing like multiple tasks at a time, plus building like relationship with my kids, plus building memories of time with my kids instead of just like passing the time. When can I tell them it's time to go? And it's just totally shifted an activity that I thought was not fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's multiple things to unpack there, right? So if you are someone that enjoys that, right? And we'll address the folks that don't, because there's some I don't like playing in the park, so we'll make sure that you're heard as well. But for folks that do like engaging in play, we often call this dose, right? You're getting dopamine, oxytocin because you're connecting with your kids, serotonin, and endorphins. So that's the reason that you feel great, right? Sitting on the bench, none of that's happening. Again, you said boredom, right? So boredom, frustration, if you feel like you have to police your kid all the time. We call that negative valence in psychology, and we want to displace that. That's why we go to our phones, right? And so we kind of trick ourselves into thinking, oh, well, this is mildly amusing, but it's not. You're really just trying to get out of that state of boredom, where what a much better way to get out of that boredom, right? By actually engaging in play. And then there's a big psychological benefit too. This comes from transactional analysis, that when you get in a childlike state with your kid, and there are going to be times that you want to be a teacher or you want to be the adult, right? Like if they're misbehaving or they're bullying someone, like absolutely turn into the adult and be like, you need to change your behavior. But if you've hit your stride and you're really enjoying it, that's when they'll disclose things they would never disclose to a parent. That's when you can find out like who their crush is, right? Even if they're, a young person, or what their likes are, because now they're looking at you, at the same level rather than, sort of this tall, leadership figure where they're not going to disclose all that. So there's all of that increased rapport and bonding that you get when you're able to play with your kids in that way. For the folks that are like, I just don't enjoy the park, right? Again, remember that you have the ability to co-create these experiences. Just like your kid, if they were doing, if they were out with their friends, let's say outside your house, and they hated baseball, they would ask their friend, let's play something else, right? And you have that power too. And so many parents forget that. You just ask. Like ultimately, you both make what I call a fun list and then figure out where that Venn diagram fits together. And there's going to be very few times where you're not going to find something that's fun for both of you if you have, a kind of mature conversation, even if your child's young.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's coming to mind is that a lot of times in our society, I've seen a lot of stuff lately where, like in America, it's so common to like separate child activities from adult activities. And one of the best things that we can actually do is something that they do, like I think it's like in a lot of like more primitive, underdeveloped countries and stuff, where they invite the children into whatever their daily tasks are. And that's how they like bond with the kids, and the kids learn, and they become, a lot more responsible than what we expect. It's like we expect to flip a switch and have our kids like learn responsibility while we keep telling them to go play somewhere else, instead of like bringing them into like, this is how we do things, and let's learn by, being together. And your kid experiences everything as play, basically. Unless you're making them sit down and write an essay, they are playing in their own heads. If you're baking a cake with your kid, that's a playtime for them.
Absolutely. I mean, so
Yeah.
spot on. And I'm at such a benefit for both sides, right? But to your point, for whatever reasons, we completely bifurcated the two experiences. And so in the book, I talk about going to these, experiential play centers, and adults have forgotten really how to do anything if they're not given a set of instructions. So you see these kids like rush into these play areas. They don't need a single instruction to be able to start having fun. Yet the adults in this very scared fashion, right, start to like back up into the walls until someone kind of invites them in to enjoy themselves. And so getting into that playful state is really beneficial as an adult as well, because we remember to start thinking in a non-linear fashion that we don't always need a map to be able to navigate our space. We can approach it really playfully. And we know, that can lead to higher degrees of creativity. So all of these things kind of bleed into, other things we're doing outside of child rearing as well. So that becomes extremely beneficial. But then also for the child, right? I landed on some research getting to the book that I found really fascinating. And it's the idea that and it's true, it's more prevalent in the Western world than the Eastern world, this idea that kids are doing chores later and later. And especially because we feel like we really can't integrate, right? So like I found households that allow 4-year-olds to wash the dishes. And if you look at it, like at first glance, you're like, what, what? And then you're, yeah, that's not that big of a deal, especially if you sort of set aside the glass, things that could be potentially harmful. But for whatever reason, we've made, integrating the responsibilities of the family unit more and more complicated here. And so it has these interesting consequences that you that highlighted, right? Like it's weird almost.
Yeah, I know my mom, like I love her so much, but she definitely failed in that area. And that was something I really learned going into my own motherhood. And I'm glad I caught it before I became a mom, was that she waited until it was way too late to start expecting us to do any kind of chores. And she had such a hard time with me and my sister getting us to like do anything. She couldn't find the right incentives. And I'm like, I'm already like 14. What do you mean? Like, I have to start taking over the kitchen. Like, that's my responsibility now. I've never cleaned the kitchen before. I don't even know what I'm doing. And she's like expected to flip the switch and be like, well, you're not like a baby anymore. You can do stuff. And so I'm so glad that I, like, as hard as it was, as cringy as it was, like letting my kids start learning to do things around the house that like they were terrible at because they were children. Like, they're tiny. My kids are 3, 5, and 7 right now. But the fact that now my 5-year-old, he will notice that the dishwasher is clean and he'll be like, I'm going to help you unload it, because I let him do it from a really young age and I made it fun for him. And it was like, that's part of being in the family, is we all live here, we all take care of the house together. And so I'm just so glad that I didn't wait until he was too old.
Yeah, and you were spot on. I was raised the same way that my mom was, really a perfectionist. And so the idea of letting us, 12 and under do anything because she knew it wouldn't be done her way. And what a horrible way to learn, right? Like if our educational system was set up that way, it'd be like we're only gonna teach you once we believe that you're gonna get 100% on a test. That's just not how, we evolve our knowledge. And so being able to break some eggs and not being a perfectionist, and then also not being punitive if they don't do it that way, like treating everything as a learning experience. And if they get it wrong, not recoil, right? Be like, oops, okay, that was kind of silly. That's not how we should do it. But like, and so, yeah, it very much becomes important. And the more you can integrate that, there's a couple benefits. One we've already touched on is that that's going to be habitual behavior and just an understanding that we're a family unit and we take care of each other, which we're really losing, which is unfortunate. And then the second is that, those are formative years. So to your point, we're meant to be rebellious once we hit 13 or 14. And, with things like, the immense amount of information that our kids are able to get, we know that that's happening earlier and earlier because I'm at one of the silver linings is they are getting smarter, but as they get smarter, they're also maturing faster, right? So that idea of being a rebellious teenager is now happening at like 11 and 12, where for us, it probably happened more at 13, 14 as a generality. So once you have that understanding, once you hit that rebellious stage, like you might still be a pain in the butt to your parents, but you're going to understand these are things that are just inherently what I'm supposed to do, like brushing my teeth.
Absolutely. Yes. I had a train of thought and I completely derailed and lost it. And I'm like, oh, I don't remember what I wanted to interject with now.
Course.
Yeah, that is some really good stuff. That is a lot to think about. So, yeah, inviting kids in. Yep, we absolutely talked about for the moms who don't like to play with their kids at the park. Inviting them into the things you already enjoy doing. And oh, I was going to say, some of it is that we also have this tendency. I think it's like very generational that we just will refuse to ask for help and refuse to accept help. And that includes help that like our kids trying to help when they're really young and they're interested in it when they're young. And then we train it out of them like, nope, don't be interested in helping with this. It's not your job. This is for grownups. And it just kind of reinforces that,
And what a
you know.
double-edged sword, right? Like one, you're not getting help. And then two, yes, you are grooming behavior to be like, okay, like let me be self-sufficient. And again, developing a two-way pathway to expressing where I might need your help. Now, what a shame, right? To shut that down of like, no, we kind of internalize and we just are stoic about all of these problems that we have. One thing I want to make sure that we cover too, in that regard, so thanks for the invitation, is this idea that if we're not taking some time for ourselves, and so I really liked your episode about the sick day, that even if you live your life through that lens of like, well, I just want to be a good homemaker and I like the fact that these folks rely on me to be the best version of yourself, and this is, so empirically validated by just a whole corpus of research. If you're not enjoying at least some of the things that you're doing, you're not going to be that version of yourself that you hope you are to be able to serve others. And so, these sort of radical forms of self-care, if you want to call them that, are not selfish at all, but really one of the best ways you have to be able to live a dutiful life if that's really, the lens that you want to operate through. So I think, similar to in the 1990s, there's this idea that if you get less sleep, you're more productive, right? And you just, no one talks about that after 30 years of really understanding that, to be productive at anything, whether that's being a parent or at work or even, just a meaningful life, you should get at least 7 hours of sleep. I think we're seeing the same thing now here with fun and leisure, that folks that are living a life completely devoid of enjoying anything that they do really just are so depleted they're not able to move the needle in any fashion that's going to get them where they want to be. And so if you feel this sense of guilt, using that as a kind of North Star, like, okay, I get it. I need to do a few things, take some time off the table for myself so that I can show up that next day, being the person that I want to be. Then use that as your frame so that you can, get some things on the calendar that fill you up.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I actually tried that like selfless homemaker, like let me do everything for my family for a little while, and it fizzled out. And one thing I noticed was like that phrase, if you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. That is such a load of crap. Because what happens is if you put your like everything into doing something for your family because you're like, oh, I love them so much and I'm taking on this role of maintaining the home and cooking all the meals and just doing everything for them. Like, one, they're not learning to do anything for themselves. That's a separate conversation. But also, wow, the feelings of resentment that no one wants to talk about. You start to hate what you're doing because you've made it a job and you've made it a chore instead of saying, hey, this is something I'm enjoying doing and I'm doing it out of the love of my heart, not I'm going to cut off everything about myself, and I'm going to cut off my own identity and put everything into this. But like, I'm going to be the best version of me here so that we can like build this family around who we actually are.
I think the two big, things that back up what you just shared is one, we all need renewal, and that's not just sleep, right? We need the ability to, there are plenty of selfless people, as in the book, the final chapter is about true change makers, and even folks that are, just spending all their time, trying to change the world, if they don't renew their batteries, they're not going to be able to do that, right? And so certainly, that's going to be true for mere mortals as well, like myself, right? And then the other is that if you attach an outcome to anything, ultimately it's going to be problematic, but it's also just not going to be enjoyable because then you're never being mindful in the moment. You're waiting, like, what is it, this end result? And and then you kind of hang your head on that making you happy. And we know that that really becomes a problem. Because one, it's so episodic, right? I mean, an outcome happens and then it's gone. So then you're just kind of waiting for the next outcome instead of like joyfully making a meal and, to your point, hopefully inviting folks in. So it's a pro-social, sort of activity and then sharing it, in a very loving way. Like waiting around for, I want, Father of the Year. It's just such a good roadmap to unhappy times. That you're spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. And what comes to mind is it feels like your life is becoming a checklist instead of an experience when you're just chasing that next like notch in your belt, like I did the thing, now what?
And what a shame too, right? We don't need to go deep into the neurochemistry, but we know when that happens, when you kind of go into autopilot, again, that's not. You're not building this corpus of memories because our brain doesn't really want to remember pain. Like if there's true trauma, and that's not for this episode, that can be interesting with regards to how things get encoded. But everything outside of trauma to things that are enjoyable, generally, we just want to forget, right? Because they're not meaningful and it wasn't something that we want to replicate. And so if you are always in that mode, right? Well, I'll just get the dinner done. Oh, the day is done. Okay, now I. Not only are you not like sort of building a corpus of memories that will lead to resilience, oftentimes you're so depleted that the way you kind of escape from that is like maybe one too many glasses of wine at the end of the evening or whatever it is, right? Instead of, again, just a simple reframe or figuring out a way to attack that activity in a different way where you're like, this was really rewarding and I actually enjoyed, the time with the people that I love and I really, and I would do this over and over again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I think we're getting low on time.
Okay.
So,
Speaking of batteries,
did you say what you felt you needed to say today? Was there anything else you need to tack on?
oh, I think we did. We did it justice for sure.
Absolutely. I think there's definitely a lot of information in there. I'm excited for this one to air. All right, everybody, this has been Mike Rucker. He is the author of The Fun Habit, and I, really recommend you go ahead and get that on Audible and listen to it, because I know we're too busy to sit down and look at a book. Where else should I send my listeners to find you?
Yeah, so I write about the science of fun at michaelrucker.com. I write for Psychology Today as well, but you can find all the other channels that where I create content from my website.
Okay, awesome. And I'll go ahead and link that below too. Thank you so much for being here.
You so much for having me.
Hey, gorgeous. Just one more quick thought. Could you please do me a ginormous favor and rate and review and share the show? Please. This is how, if I have helped you in any kind of a way, if I have given you one little tidbit of help or encouragement or insight in any way, please do not hesitate to email me about the change that your life has had, because I get off on hearing about how I've helped you. It does not inflate my ego. It just keeps me going, and it makes me so excited and so happy. It makes me feel like all the work I put in is worth it if I can help one of you feel better about your life. Do not hesitate to share my episodes with your friends. Copy the link into a text, or share it at your next mom group, or share it on social media. And if you do, please tag me at Britt Clarkson if you're on Instagram, because I love to see who's listening and what you learned and got out of any kind of an episode. Anyways, friend, I love you so much. Thank you for being here.